that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh air, Wick.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select 2 or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
NFL Sunday Ticket is now on YouTube and YouTube TV, which means that you can stay close to your team even if you don't live in their town. Like, maybe you're a Raven who married a Seahawk who got a job in the land of the Falcons. With NFL Sunday Ticket, you can watch your team's out-of-market Sunday afternoon games no matter where you live, because you shouldn't have to change teams even if you change towns. NFL Sunday Ticket, now on YouTube and YouTube TV. Go to youtube.com/presale to get $50 off.
Terms and embargoes apply. Offer ends 9/19. No refund. Subscription auto renews.
This episode of Red Inca, we talk about fast bowling and accuracy, and we see a lot more of both right now. So I thought I'd get someone in who was at least good at one and probably wished he was slightly better at the other.
Steve Harmison, and now talk nonsense for Talk Sport.
Fast bowlers have just become a lot more accurate while still becoming faster. We have 90-mile-an-hour bowlers now with knuckleballs and wobble seams. It's incredible. So this episode, we talk about biomechanics, actions, preparation, short versus tall, white balls, and we very, very briefly mention bowling to second slip. Mate, it was only after I asked you onto this podcast, I realised it sounded like I was trolling you a little bit when I wanted you to talk about very accurate, very fast bowlers. And then I thought, he thinks I'm going to talk about the ball to second slip. But when that's it. That's the last mention of that particular ball. But you and I have been talking about this a lot, a little bit for TalkSport and then sometimes just chatting around the room as well, is that really fast bowlers, of which there's only ever been a handful at one time, they used to basically spray it everywhere. Like if you look at Jeff Thompson, it's like the ball could go anywhere. Half of his most famous balls are flying down the leg side and nowhere near anyone. Sean Tate, Shoaib Akhtar and those sorts of guys. It's incredible now how much different fast bowling is. And Pat Cummins is the one I notice at the moment. We've never had someone as fast as Pat Cummins, but also as accurate as Pat Cummins. And you've got a theory on this. Lead me in. Tell me what your theory is.
Well, I just look at the way fast bowling is at this moment in time and the practice that they go in and the way the game's changed. When you say there's a lot more stats on balls in areas, different things from like batting and, you know, range hitting and everything like that, I think bowling does work that. And I think the straight lines that they now use and the angles that the bowlers use and the practice that they've got and the facilities, but the people that work with them, the analytics side of the way they work, attacking the crease in certain parts where they come from at the top of their mark, where they go straight through the line. The game hasn't changed, I don't think. I just think the actual dynamics of bowling in a straight line is more evident than anything else, for the simple fact is there's a lot more you can see now compared to what it was maybe 15, 20 years ago. And just for an example, I remember having a conversation bowling around the wicket from Duncan Fletcher, and a lot of people that bowled around the wicket, right arm bowlers around the wicket, you would hide behind the umpire and then you pop out from the umpire and pop back in. But that's dynamics working against each other. And I remember Duncan Fletcher, who I didn't appreciate Duncan until after I'd finished playing for him. But it was like, no, if you start on the sort of, if you can imagine the side, you know, you've got the sideline. If you start just outside there and you start and run straight towards off stump, there's a line that goes all the way to off stump. There's less can go wrong. And if your action is perfectly upright, and if your follow through is perfectly upright, and your head position is going down towards the ball, there's less can go wrong. And trying to make it as simple as possible. And I think what you've got with that, you see something like Jimmy Anderson, just slight little variations of where he starts his run-up to where he lands on the crease. And then if he moves a little bit wider, where he starts his run-up that little bit wider. But it's not a case of just starting all the way back there. It's the last sort of three or four strides where you go through the crease. That's where you're attacking and you're in a straight line. It's the same as batting. A lot of people talk about Steve Smith and what a horrendous technique he's got and that. But he hasn't. He's got a perfect technique because when he picks the bat up, it might go legs offside, it might go leg side, but when it comes through the line of the ball, the last two or three parts to the point of contact, it's actually coming down perfectly straight for the area he wants to hit it in. So it might be coming down from second slip, but if it's coming down from second slip, it's because he's trying to hit the ball through mid-wicket. He's not like trying to hit it across the energy of the ball so you'll get perfect timing. So for me, the simple way to explain, well, it's not a simple way to explain because I've explained it horribly wrong in a long way. But at the end of the day, if you can keep bowling in a straight line, simple, by starting in a straight line, going through the crease in a straight line, and an action that can hold up perfectly well. And we're talking about top-class bowlers here. We're not talking about young kids. This is guys like, you talk about Pat Cummins, you talk about the likes of Mark Wood, Jofra Archer. Jofra Archer is a simple one. You know, Jofra Archer doesn't alter his run-up too much. He literally starts from the same spot, lands in the same spot. His ability to keep his front arm straight, his bowling action all the way through, finishes off, and the energy he's got behind the ball doesn't mean he has to alter and change. He looks for subtle variations off the pitch because he bowls straight. Glenn McGrath was a bit like that. McGrath bowled not stump to stump, but he bowled fractionally outside off stump because mechanically he went up straight, come down straight, and he landed in the same spot. And he basically said, well, if anything's going to happen off the pitch, the ball's in an area where it's going to make the batsman play. So Archer's a bit like that, but at a faster pace. Mentioning about the likes of Brett Lee and myself, Shoaib Akhtar, bowlers like that, we probably didn't have the technology side to back up what they've got now. Would it have made us more accurate bowlers? Possibly. The game's changed. You might have to be one day cricket. Makes you, would make you more accurate as a bowler. But I was sometimes thought, you know, the wayward bowlers were just as effective because I always believed no matter what game, situation or pitch I was playing on, if I had a wicketkeeper, two slips and a gully, even if I sprayed it, I'd bowled very, very good balls and I would get good players out. And I think that for me was just as effective than somebody who was meticulous, McGrath bowling line and length and make the batsman just block and block and leave and block and leave. Sometimes, you know, I remember Shane Warne talk about, I don't mind people hit me for four because the more confident they get, I've got an absolute ripper in me. I've got a great ball in me, which will get somebody out who thinks he can come at me because he's getting confidence. So fast bowling, there's more than one way it's going to cut for me in the fast bowling department. Nobody's really the same. But the way the game's changed from a fast bowling point of view, it had to change because the batsman has changed. And I think the bowlers are now, it's gone in cycles. The bowlers were behind the line when it came to one day cricket when it first came around. Then I think they came back into the game. And then now with the fielding restrictions, with, you know, the size of the boundaries, it's changed a little bit more in favour of the bat. But I actually think now the game's changing where the accurate fast bowlers are now, just seen the IPL auction, they are so much more better in the game. And if you've got one, you've got half a chance of doing what England did in the third T20 in India.
There's so many things there. So the biomechanics makes sense. So we know more about fast bowling. We can run people through a computer simulator and all those sorts of things now. And then you match that up with good coaches, like, as you said, Duncan Fletcher, to be able to say, look, run in a straight line, attack goes through the crease. That makes sense. The one that I've never heard before, I haven't heard talked about a lot, is that white ball cricket has changed. So you played a lot of white ball cricket. You were there for the start of T20, played one day as for England. But there's a big difference between that and Pat Cummins being, what was Pat Cummins, 16 or 17 when he first started playing representative cricket for New South Wales and coming through the system. He's a T20 player almost straight away. For him, he would have seen T20 cricket as almost as important as Test cricket. You would never have thought that way. And so there seems to be that these newer guys coming through, and Nookie is someone that you and I have both seen bowl a fair bit as well. Another guy, very, very fast, but very, very accurate. How much do you think that is linked to the fact that you can't bowl as many poor balls with a white ball?
You can't bowl many poor balls, but I think there's more clarity on the game now, as in one-day cricket. We've seen the game when Owen Morgan had, the analyst had the numbers and the matchups that everybody talks about. Everything seems to be mapped out for you now. You bowl this ball at that time, you bowl that ball at that time. So there's a lot more clarity of thought. And as a bowler, if you've got clarity of thought, you've got a great chance of succeeding. It's when there's a little bit of indifference in what you're thinking. There's a little bit of, I'm not sure what I'm going to bowl here. It's a little bit of, this batsman's coming at me, I might change my plan here. Prime example was in the third T20, was Mark Wood. Mark Wood bowled 3.3, unbelievable overs, because all he did was right and bowl as fast as I can into this part of the pitch, this sort of area. And it doesn't matter what you do, I'm fast enough to really put you on the back foot. And the more he did that, the more confidence he got, and the more he nailed it, because this was clarity of thought, bang. All of a sudden, Virat Kohli comes down a wicket, catches one off him, then all of a sudden, that ball in that area is not working anymore. What do I do now? And as he's running in, he's probably thinking, do I go full? Do I stay short? Do I do? All this goes through the mind. All of a sudden, he's gone for the Yorker, not quite got there. Virat Kohli's hit him over his head for six. All of a sudden, he's now going back to his mark thinking, right, I can't bowl a fack of a length ball because he's pulled me for six. I can't bowl a full ball because he checked drive me for six. What do I do now? And then the next ball went for four as well. And that's the difference between a bowler with clarity of thought and somebody who hasn't. And I think that's what's changed in the game for me, because the game is mapped out for you. And because it's mapped out for you, you start grooving your action in such a way where it is becoming easier just to bang out a length. But you've got to have pace. And the game has changed in such a way where we joked on the radio when Chris Jordan came on straight after Jofra Archer and Mark Wood. And it was like, this is a different wicket. This is a different ball. This is a different bowler. And he was bowling 4, possibly 5 mile an hour, slower than Mark Wood. He was bowling 86, 87 mile an hour. And that's the difference between top level, out and out quick bowlers and what they look at. But what they do is they hit an area because that's what they've been told to do. So then they know 2 days leading into the game, I've got 24 balls to hit. I'm bowling back of a length, I'm bowling Yorker, I'm bowling a slower ball. The slower ball is something that comes with instinct, I think. You practice it, but you put in your lock in, you go. And I think what they do now is they practice so much on hitting these two lengths in a game. And because of that, I think that's why the bowlers have gone to a whole new level. But pace is huge, because if you don't quite nail it, the bat, you know, it's it's massive in the game now. They're huge big bats now, small boundaries, and you get punished. And I think that's where I see the game evolving to. Teams are going to have people like Chris Jordan, a bit like Tom Curran bowling. They're going to pick them in the team. I'm just talking from an England point of view. They're going to pick them in a team to bowl two or three overs at the death. But if you bowl at the start, you're not in the game. And I think that's where the game's going to change. Picking five bowlers now, you're picking five bowlers for certain slots. And I think that makes bowlers better because they've got clarity of thought and know the job. And this is what they're going to go out and do. Where possibly 15, 20 years ago, or when the 2020 first came into it, it was all about just bowling your 10 overs, trying to keep you down to 5.5 an over. And if you bowl 10 overs for 55 in a 50-over international between 2000 and 2010, you did well. That was your job. Where now, it's not 10 overs anymore. It's six balls of this over has to be nailed on. Six balls of that over has to be nailed on. And I think because of that, mentally, you're a different bowler. And I think the clarity of thought is huge in the game, and it helps.
It's really interesting. I was thinking about Mark Wood because obviously you've had a lot to do with him from him coming up from your era. And I'd say he's a fundamentally more accurate fast bowler than you were. Obviously, he's a different height as well, which helps. And part of your problem was, you know, the Mornay-Morkel problem where you guys are fast and tall. So a lot of things can go wrong with that. But Mark Wood, I was thinking of someone like maybe Nanti Haywood, like a similar kind of pace, a similar kind of energy off the wicket. Nanti Haywood, I remember I worked with his wicketkeeper at Scotland, Grant Morgan, who kept with him domestically. And he said he spent most of his time diving down leg side trying to stop the ball. You just don't see that from Mark Wood. And that huge change in the game is so interesting. And the clarity of thought, the white ball, the biomechanics, all these things sort of play in. But the other thing is just the skills. Jofra Archer bowls a knuckleball. And I think it was in the second T20, Stuart Broad was on air talking about how hard they were. Now, Stuart Broad can bowl a leg cutter and is a very highly skillful bowler. To think that someone who can bowl at 90, and I think Jofra's got up to, 95 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Can also bowl a knuckleball. I know, again, you are very famous for one particular slow ball, but you're also very famous for saying that you have no idea how Michael Clarke missed that and you weren't very good at slow balls. The little skills that Jofra Archer and Jasprit Bumrah is another one have, and you can put Pat Cummins' wobble seam into that as well. All of those things, those are the sorts of things that guys like Muhammad Asif and Stuart Clarke and, you know, slower bowlers used to do. And now suddenly even the fast guys can come in at 90 miles an hour and bowl a knuckleball. The way that people are preparing and training has just completely changed from your era, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Literally, training in our era was you bowl a few bouncers, a few Yorkers, bowl in the middle for a bit, tried slow balls in the nets, but it wasn't, like I said, it was more of a longer process. It was, you've got 10 overs for under 60, and you've done your job, where now it's not like that. It's literally every ball counts and matters because of. So don't get me wrong, during that time, there was a lot of bowlers trying a lot of different things. There was bowlers had to do that because it didn't have the skill sets or the pace that some of the other bowlers did. If you bowl fast, you listen to Chu the day talking on the 30-20 international. He was like, well, forget slower balls, forget trying to change your pace. If you bowl 90 miles an hour, bowl 90 miles an hour. Let's see some licks. Let's see some pace, man. And that's what Jude is saying, because that's what we were brought up on. You're in the team to bowl fast. So bowl fast. We don't want you to bowl any slower than 90 miles an hour because we've got other bowlers can do that. We have the likes of Alex Wolf. That was, I can remember during my time, you know, John Lewis, Jimmy Curtley. It was like, well, they're in the team to bowl Yorkers. They're in the team to bowl that medium pace. You're in the team to bowl fast. So bowl fast for 10 overs. And that's where the game's changed, because you talk about all these skills that bowlers have got. Bowling slow balls, you have to be not only comfortable, it's got to come natural to you. I bowled a split-fingered slow ball and I bowled an off-cutter because my action was more suited to when the arms and legs were going. When it came over, it became natural. For me, because I lost my wrist a lot, for me to try and bowl a back-of-the-hand slow ball was virtually impossible because I wouldn't be able to get my wrist round in time. And if I did lose my wrist, it wouldn't come out. It would just go straight up in the air. So I tried all these things, and the more comfortable ones with the off-cutting slower ball, the off-spinning off and the split finger. And I think it just comes down to what's natural to individuals. You know, you watch someone like Glenn McGrath, who bowled a split-fingered slower ball, but you could see he was trying that knuckleball, but it ended up being a split-fingered ball. But it was just a little bit slower, but not a massive amount slower. These guys now are bowling them 5, 8 mile an hour slower than what their normal ball is, which is just enough to catch a batsman out. Because if you go even slower than that, we've seen a couple of times in the T20 series against India and England so far, that if you bowl it really slow, you don't get it quite right. It becomes a free hit because they just sit in the pitch and the batsman's gone. And then you, I'm going again. And then bang. So it comes back to preparation. No matter what you talk about, Jared, when you talk about fast bowling, it comes back to preparation and it comes back to working the game out. And it comes back to the clarity before you go on a pitch that you know your skills. You can teach kids all the stuff in the world. But if they don't practice it and they don't really feel comfortable doing it, then don't encourage them to do it, because all it does is bowling's confidence, bowling's feel, bowling's natural. And the most natural you can make bowling, the easier it becomes. And all of a sudden, you're fighting against yourself. My coach is telling me to bowl slower balls. I'm not really comfortable bowling slower balls. By the time you've bowled it, it doesn't go anywhere near where you want to go. And all of a sudden, you've gone for a boundary. And then your shoulders are slumped, pressure's on, and I've got to go back and do it again. So, yeah, you've got to have a clear mind and a clear thought process of what you're doing. And you've got to be able to nail it. Because if you don't, then don't bowl it. I wasn't comfortable bowling a slow ball. So I didn't bowl them because I didn't really feel comfortable doing them.
I think when you talk about all that, that's the one thing I've noticed in the 10 years or whatever, 14 years I've been covering cricket, is the way that the nets have changed. Mm. So you could see that, I reckon, about 2013, 2014, a couple of teams worked out that bowling around the wicket to left-handers when you're a fast bowler is a better way of doing it. But the problem was that it took about another 3 or 4 years to happen because bowlers needed to get used to it.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember one of the guys that I work with, I was saying to him, look, you're getting smashed by left-handers every game. Why don't you bowl around the wicket? And he's like, oh, I don't know how. And I was like, mate, we've got training facilities. Just talk to the coach, talk to the bowling coach, and we'll do it. And I think that's the biggest difference now, is just, it's not that you guys weren't thinking of that sort of stuff. It's just there wasn't that sort of support network. I mean, here's my question for you. Did anyone ever check how accurate your bowling was? Was there any like system that they had in place?
There was no system you had in place. It was, you get to your 10 overs and that's it. It's not broke down any more than that. And I think, yeah, you talk about that is the difference that comes. It was probably in my generation, my time, the one person that, when it comes to practice, who was ahead of his time, and he was the genius, and that was Peterson. Peterson wouldn't face a ball in the net that he wasn't going to face in the middle. Kevin wouldn't face new balls in the net. No chance. He would face them at the end of a session. He was so single-minded and driven that he was going to face. There was one time in Perth where we didn't have any decent balls, so we ended up bowling with new balls. And he went berserk, absolutely mental that he wasn't facing them. And then he started trying to slug them out the net. So we ended up just bowling bounces at him. And it was the biggest car crash session you've ever seen. Hoggard bowled a bouncer. Lewis bowled a bouncer. So I thought, I've got to go in. I'm sticking with my bowlers. Bowled a bouncer. We bowled 7 bouncers at Kevin in a row because he was trying to slug these. He didn't want to face the new balls, and he tried to slug them everywhere. And what he said afterwards was the point that I'm going to try and make. And in the end, I was like peacemaker because Hoggard and Peterson had a little bit of an issue. And I said, look, Kev, if you bat properly, we'll bowl properly. But if you're going to bat like an idiot, or not an idiot, but if you're going to, you're not bowling, you're just trying to slug it, it's our preparation as well. So we went back to old balls, and at the end he came out and he was like, I don't face new balls in the nets. I don't face new balls in the game. I'll face new balls when I'm 70 not out and I'm facing a second new ball. Don't face new balls in the nets. This is my preparation. You want to bowl with new balls, that's the middle. And it was like, yes, he's right. We don't bowl at Kevin Peterson with brand new balls because he bats at number 5. If you want to bowl with a new ball, we are new ball bowlers. We do our preparation out in the middle, then get somebody else to bowl in the nets at Kevin Peterson. And I think that was when, probably one of the first times, and that was 2006-07 tour, one of the first times it really hit home that a net session isn't just about, well, you bat for 20 minutes, we bowl for 20 minutes, and then we might bowl a few in the middle, you might have a few throwdowns, and off you go. The net session is just an extended arm of what the game situation is. You know, you are going to bowl at him. These are your 4 overs. These are your match overs. You nail it, and there's no practice anymore. That's the key. There's no practice anymore. And I think that is something that has evolved into where the game is at this minute in time. Fast bowlers, they don't bowl dead overs anymore. Mm. We probably bowled more dead overs than we did match overs because you were ticking boxes. Tudes talked and Goffey talked about first time he went on tour. What was it? Graham Dilley, Graham Gooch, a coach and a physio. That was it. Now you've got backroom staff, like you've not believed, who have got so much information going into that session that you are not going to take high catches. If you're a guy in that field in the ring, all you're going to get bombarded with are catches from in the ring. And I think the fast bowling is exactly the same. You bowl your practice overs exactly the same as you bowl your match overs. And then you, as Fletcher would say, you're training your brain to be switched on from literally ball one, as opposed to how many times you've seen a fast bowler, first ball of a session, would have dribbled down leg side or dribbled down the offside or be a slow bouncer because they're just trying to get themselves, trying to get the body moving. Don't happen anymore. It is literally nailed on. And that's because of the preparation and the practice.
Thinking about this too, there are still fast bowlers out there who are not as accurate. So for me, I think Billy Stanlake should be the best bowler in the world, in that he's, I don't know, 6'8", 6'9". He's strong and he can bowl over 90 miles an hour. But the reason that Billy Stanlake hasn't made a career is because the batsmen have evolved and they will pick off his bad balls in a way now. I would think that if you had come through just even a generation later, your bowling would probably be a lot more like Mornay Morkel's, where you'd still be as dangerous, but you'd be putting the ball just in a spot. And it's not like Mornay Morkel was a devastatingly accurate bowler, but he put the ball in a spot more often. But it's funny because you talked about the inconsistencies early on, where you were saying that, you know, and you've said this a lot before, that batsmen not always knowing where you're going to bowl, it helps. The only bowler, modern day bowler I can think of, who bowls very, very quickly and batsmen are a little bit unsure where the ball's going to be, is probably Mitchell Starc.
Yeah.
And his left arm, which is a bit different, and he's also, 6'6", 6'7" as well, which helps. But there really isn't that many guys left. There's a lot of guys out there like, you know, Billy Stanlake, and was it Aaron Sumner, the young Tasmanian kid, I think, as well. There's a few guys out there that have that pace, but they're not coming through in the way that Nancy Haywood did, or you did, or Devon Malcolm, or Shoaib, or Sean Tate did. You really have to be very accurate now. Is that just because batsmen have been on ball machines and there are more quick bowlers around now than there was 20 years ago, so people are just more used to it, do you think?
I think a lot of batsmen now feel as though the fast bowlers to score. They feel as though that this is that can score. Somebody like myself, Mornay Morkel, you talk about Billy Stanlake, a batsman will set himself up and think, well, stumps aren't in the game here. I can hit the ball straight back past him because the ball on the stumps is not going to have a great deal on it because a bowler will float that towards the stump. So I can hit that straight back past him. Not a problem. My hand-eye coordination, not foot movement, can see the ball, which is just looped at them, floated at them, and they'll take the stumps out of the equation, and they'll say, right, anything after that, it's a free hit. Oof. So as a bowler, your margin for errors go, as a tall bowler, gets a little bit shorter, gets a little bit smaller. What you find with tall bowlers is a lot more can go wrong for the simple fact is, and it's just fractions. I look at somebody like Mark Wood, Jofra Archer, even a Pat Cummins, very tight in their actions. Mm. So their gather is very, very tight. It's very compact. They go up. They don't go right up in the air like I did with both arms. Stanlake, he's tall. He goes up in the air. Mornay Morkel, both arms go up in the air. There's a lot more can go wrong because there's a lot more moving parts. I see bowlers now have less moving parts. You look at somebody like Jasper Bumrah, where you think, well, actually, there is a lot of moving parts because he sort of shuffles in and then his arm goes out and then it comes back. But actually, there's not a great deal of moving parts when he's actually going into his gather. His arm goes out towards where the umpire would be, but then he comes back. And as he comes back and goes up, there's very little moves off the straight. Everything goes up and down. So Bumrah's a little bit like an optical illusion. He goes out before he gets to the business area and then he comes back in. Malinga was similar. Because his arm went out. Yes, it stared out, but it didn't move. It was very straight. And it was a lot of people say, oh, Malinga, he throws it. He doesn't. He's actually got the straightest bowling action you'd ever have. It's just he comes from a different area. But a lot of tall, gangly, fast bowlers. Stuart Broad was similar when he first came on the scene. Then he changed it. He's gathered, gone from sort of throwing his arm up a little bit to then gathering in tight. He changed his cocked wrist there and his approach at the time. And I think that helped him no end with his accuracy. But the likes of myself and Shoaib, there was a lot of arms up in the air and coming down and coming through. There's a lot more can go wrong. But your tall gangly bowlers just have to be slightly off. And they're slightly off at the stumps. And because of the bounce, the wicketkeeper's an extra 2 or 3 yards back. It looks even worse as it goes past. And I worked out very, very quickly earlier in my career that once the ball goes past the batsman, I switch off. I'm not bothered. If it goes down leg side and the keeper's diving full stretch, I'm not bothered. It's where it goes. I had a thing in my mind. I could switch that off and say, well, if it's going past the batsman at this point, I'm happy. If it's miles down leg side of the batsman, then I'm in trouble. But if it just goes past the batsman, and a lot of it was, especially left-handers, I've got a lot of left-handers caught down leg side, caught sort of leg slip or caught behind down leg side, just gloving it. Once it got to like Philip Mustard or Alex Stewart when I first came on the scene or Garrett Jones and beyond, if they're diving full strength down leg side, it's not because it was an inaccurate ball. It's just that the height and the bounce that, you know, the big tall bowlers get, it exaggerates by the time it gets to the wicketkeeper. That's the wicketkeeper's job, unfortunately. He's got to try and stop the ball. He's got to try and catch the ball. And I feel as though that was something, a strength of mine, I could switch that off, because that could damage a young bowler thinking, oh, that looked awful down leg side. That looked awful down leg side. But actually, it's not. It's where the ball. So I would bowl a ball that would sort of swing back into the left-handed batsman, just sort of tickle and miss his ribcage. But by the time the wicketkeeper sort of took two steps his right and took it above his head because of the ball bounced, it looked as though it was a mile down leg side. But actually, it wasn't, because I could see the batsman, the whites of his eyes, thinking, oh, I don't really fancy that. And I think that is what a tall bowler does. Morning Walker was exactly the same. If Morning Walker bowled a rib tickler that just missed the right-handed batsman's ribcage area or sort of glove area, by the time it got to Mark Boucher down leg side, it looked awful. Yeah. But actually, it wasn't. So it's, again, another optical illusion that you can have with fast bowlers. A Goffey or a Mark Wood or a Simon Jones, if they just missed leg stump, well, the wicketkeeper took it, not a problem. It didn't look as bad. And Goffey's another one. Goffey was another one like the likes of Mark Wood and Simon Jones. You know, very little could go wrong with their action. The ran relatively straight. Goffey's front arm, he threw it at the batsman. And he was all bustle, everything in there, where there's a little bit more can go wrong with the more languid bowlers and the longer, taller bowlers. I actually felt when, you know, and I keep saying this to Mark, the faster you bowl, the more accurate you'll get, because there's less can go wrong. The minute you start slowing down, the minute you start doubting yourself, the minute you don't go through the crease quickly, is the minute that little things can come in, your timings go wrong. And the timing is huge when you're trying to bowl your action.
So I think that is another fundamental change. So I haven't been able to talk to Sean Pollock about this, but I'm pretty sure that when Sean Pollock played with Malcolm Marshall back in '90s, I suppose, Malcolm Marshall said, when you want to be more accurate, you pull back your pace a little bit. But one thing I've noticed with, and you could say this about Rabada, you could say this about, well, Nokia, Pat Cummins is, I think, the most obvious example. It seems to me like bowlers just aren't pulling back their pace anymore. They continue to go through, and a lot of that has to be fitness, obviously, the biomechanics sort of stuff that you're talking about running through and all that sort of stuff. But fundamentally now, I don't think you'll get bowlers like Sean Pollock or Glenn McGrath, who after a couple of years just completely pull back their pace anymore. I think people are going to keep their pace, because we now, and we saw that T20 that you keep talking about, the third T20 the other night, we just see now that if you could bowl anywhere near accurate at 90 miles an hour consistently, you are putting so much pressure on the batsman. And before, there were little things that could go wrong. As you said, you know, maybe the tall bowler bowls the short one down the leg side and you could help it on its way, or dragging short and wide and all those sorts of things. All that sort of stuff, every sort of couple of years, seems to be disappearing. And now guys are like, I can bowl consistently at 90 miles an hour at the top of off stump. Now, I know Pat Cummins is an absolute freak, but it seems to me that that is where bowling is going to go. People bowling as fast as possible and as accurate as possible. And I can tell you from baseball, that's kind of what happened in baseball, that you had the combination of the skill guys with the pace. And I think that might happen with cricket now that we know a little bit more about preparation and everything else. Am I mad, Harmy, or do you think that is the direction we're going?
You're right. When it comes down to the fast bowlers bowling more faster balls that are more purposeful in a way, which is preparation. And when you talk about reining your pace in, and the Sean Pollocks and the Glenn McGrath, the reason why they were that good, because they were just good. They were fantastic bowlers on any given surface. They could land the ball in such a place. It was so mechanical. You're talking great to the game here. I think we will see another Glenn McGrath or Sean Pollock, because there will be a great bowler. Yeah, Pat Cummins might rein it back in when he's in his latter time. But by then, I don't see him playing one-day cricket. Playing one-day cricket with a white ball, it's everything you've got. And I think what comes with it, one of my big examples was someone like Stephen Finn. And I'd just come out of the game when Finn had these little bit issues. And I could see it, because I could see it myself. I could see Stephen Harmison and Stephen Finn. And I was like, oh, he's not wanting to let go of the ball. He's not wanting to bowl the ball. For all exactly what we've just been saying, is that he's got no confidence. And his match, and probably his preparation overs weren't his match overs. And it took me till I was finished, till I probably realised this. But I also realised that my first ever captain was David Boone. And there was a lot of times I would be looking at slip and thinking, is he awake in there? Is he going to take me off in a minute? He bowled me 9, 10, 11 over spells. ECB were mental, absolutely berserk. I learned very early how to bowl over after over after over. I think my second full season as an 18-year-old, I bowled 600 overs. I was an under 18 at the time. ECB were mental. And he wasn't bothered. And I remember him telling me, basically, we had a photo court start the season in our white kit, blue kit, for a one-day kit. And he just said, take your blue kit off, son. And he said, give it to the coach. He says, because you'll not need that. You're playing 16 first-class matches. I never bowled a white ball for 2 years when I was a professional cricketer. And it was only because in the game I did bowl a white ball in, I had to borrow somebody else's kit because we literally, I think we went to Somerset with 12 men and somebody got injured and I had to play. And it was just, he just learned me how to bowl lots of overs. And it was done a different way. And I felt as though I could bowl and bowl and bowl. And I got going. And I always felt as though I needed to keep bowling to the point where I was nearly injured to keep my rhythm. If I had 3 or 4 days off, it took me a couple of days to get my action right and go straight again. And I felt that with someone like Finn, who probably was getting looked after. He was missing games here. He was doing that. And I think the tall bowlers need to keep bowling. They need a rhythm and the way it's going. And I think what we're finding at this minute in time, and I've said it all along, that the more you bowl, the more your action becomes stronger. The bowling muscles become supple and they become harder. And less can go wrong once you've over that probably 3 or 4 week period. If you get through that 3 or 4 week period, coming back from an injury and you are bowling properly and you're nailing it and you're nailing it and you're nailing it, if you keep going at it, you keep bowling every sort of 2 or 3 days, then there's very little for me that can go wrong and get injured. Bowling is such a freak thing to do. You could get injured at any time because who in their right mind tells you to run as fast as you can, throw yourself in the air and hurl your body as fast as you can through a crease when they say, you know, 8 times your body weight goes through your front leg and then go back and do it again and again and again. As batsmen would say, we are freaks of nature. We are, and that's just it. But I think the reason why the likes of Mark Wood's not getting as many injuries as he is now compared to what he was 4 years ago, the reason why Pat Cummins is the best bowler, for me, this is the biggest example. The reason why Pat Cummins is the best bowler in the world and the fastest bowler in the world and the most devastating bowler in the world and not the Pat Cummins from 4 or 5 years ago is because when Pat Cummins is bowling balls in practice, it's very similar to what he is in a game. And what I mean by that is the minute he goes back to 20 years ago, Steve Harmison trying to sort of get through 20 minutes in the nets at 70% of it, and then you have to fire up and go at 100% in a game, then I think that's the difference. Now they're bowling meaningful balls in practice, which means clarity of thought in their mind, but it's also keeping their body at such a level that their bowling muscles aren't. You get a new pair of trainers and the soles of the trainers after a while just sort of go down and they go down, they go down, then your feet start hurting, your knees start hurting, then your hips start hurting. This is, you're not giving it a chance to do that. But your bowling muscles, your body is staying the same throughout and staying consistent. And for me, I think that is one of the biggest reasons why Pat Cummins is still playing now compared to what he was. There was a 7-year gap between one test match and his next one. Mark Wood's the same. What we're finding now is, I think, I don't know this for certain because I put my outlook of it, is these guys must be bowling properly in practice and bowling meaningful and not lowering their bowling muscles and, you know, not giving them a chance to sort of go soft and then go hard again. They are literally keeping it at the same all the time. So they might be resting for a longer period, but actually when they're bowling properly, they're bowling purposefully, they're bowling meaningfully, and there's less can go wrong because the action stays strong, it stays the same. And when they are hitting the crease and the body weight and everything that goes through it, it's staying consistent.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Not a problem.
Thank you for listening. There are links to works by my guests in the show notes. Please review this show on Apple Podcasts or on any podcasting platform you have access to. This show is made possible by the people who support us on Patreon. So thank you all to those who do. If you want to hear more Red Inca episodes and you have available funds, please help us out on Patreon, which you can find the link also in the show notes. Red Inca is made by me, Jared Kimber. Nick McCorriston is the producer. He looks after your ears. And the theme tune is called The Prisoners by the Red Crickets.
Social Podcast Network.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.